Franklin has replaced the village of Nequassee. In the summer of 1776, log houses, farm fields, wooden sweat lodges, and one or more granaries cover 100 acres surrounding this mound. As made clear by the drawing on the marker, what is left of the mound is less than a third of the original footprint and much shorter. The mound dates back to around 1000 CE, built by Mississippian culture natives. Atop it is a council house or townhouse. After the Cherokees moved to the area, Nequassee became a center of worship to their creator god. A fire that had always been fire burned on an altar in the townhouse with the belief the Cherokees would not perish as long as the flame lasted. When other towns adopted a ritual of rekindling their sacred fires each year, the flame here was the source. A native storyteller said it was moved before a 1761 British invasion, see historical tidbits below, and placed in a smoke hole on the south side of Hickory Nut Mountain. There's an ancient story told of this mound, recounted in a 1900 compilation of Cherokee stories for the Smithsonian Institute. Before the arrival of Europeans, Creeks or another nation attacked towns to the southeast. The Cherokee warriors of Nequassee went to meet them downriver, but were beaten back. A strange chief they assumed to be from the upper towns across the mountains told them to withdraw so his warriors could support them. The story continues. They fell back along the trail, and as they came near the townhouse, they saw a great company of warriors coming out from the side of the mound as through an open doorway. Then they knew that their friends were the Nanehi, the immortals, although no one had heard before that they lived under Nequassee Mound. The Nanehi poured out by hundreds, armed and painted for the fight, and the most curious thing about it all was that they became invisible as soon as they were fairly outside of the settlement, so that although the enemy saw the glancing arrow or the rushing tomahawk and felt the stroke, he could not see who sent it. Before such invisible foes, the invaders soon had to retreat. As they retreated, they tried to shield themselves behind rocks and trees, but the Nanehi arrows went around the rocks and killed them from the other side, and they could find no hiding place. The immortals then returned to the mound, where they are believed still to live. However, the Cherokees are wise enough not to rely on them. On word of the approach of the outsider army, they have abandoned the village. Thus, there is no one to greet an advance unit of 600 militia who appear from the north on Tuesday, September 10, 1776. They inspect the houses, surely climbing the mound to check inside the townhouse. Most go south to a nearby village, some possibly continuing further, trying to meet up with South Carolina forces headed this way. An unknown number apparently go back the way they came to report their findings, which includes a lot of harvested corn. 4 days later, the entire army arrives from Cowee to the north and camps in the deserted town, for a total of around 2,400 men with more than 1,000 pack horses. This is the end of the road for Captain Irvin Sr. of the Mecklenburg County Regiment, first name unknown. He dies here, according to Lieutenant William Lenore. Lenore doesn't say whether this was from natural causes, the greatest killer of soldiers in the 18th century, or from a wound Irvin might have received in a skirmish above Cowee. The next day, officers gather somewhere, we can guess it is in the townhouse, for a council of war to discuss strategy. They decide to leave a number of men behind while the rest of the army moves west to attack more towns. Monday the 16th, the main force heads south for unknown reasons, to the right when facing the bridge, and eventually west. The army returns around 4 p.m. on Sunday the 29th by way of Wyah Gap, having destroyed a dozen towns and crops in a loop as far as modern Murphy, near which they finally met up with the South Carolinians. The armies followed a standard tactic: burn every house, cut down or trample the crops, seize or kill livestock, kill any Cherokee that fought back, and move on to the next towns. In some cases, prisoners would be taken and sold as slaves. In other cases, Cherokees were shot and killed, and some scalped. Lenore noted, without specifying where this happened, one of the Guilford men, Samuel Curry, was left behind sick, was killed, and scalped. Two of the men left here in Nequassee had died in the interim as well. The next day, the army crossed the river back toward Davidson's Fort, where the campaign started, now Old Fort, east of Asheville, completing the route that becomes known as the Rutherford Trace. Lenore doesn't bother to state the obvious. Before leaving, they burned the town of Nequassee and destroyed its entire food supply. If you would like to follow the 100-mile loop taken by the army to the next site on the Cherokee Campaigns Tour, use our Rutherford Trace Route 4 page, linked from the bottom of this section. Please go to the audio clip under Historical Tidbits.